You are tuned to KBBI AM 890, Homer. Time for the coffee table. I'm your host, Kathleen Gustafson. Also in the room, there's the Reverend Lisa Talbot from the Homer United Methodist Church. Let's check your mic. How are you doing this morning?
Hey, good morning. I'm doing great, Kathleen. Thank you for hosting us.
Thanks for being here. And Olivia Erickson for the Safe Families for Children program.
Hi.
Also, Amy Woodruff. So when we were introducing you, we didn't do a very good job of it. So how do you introduce yourself?
I am the coordinator for the Southern Kenai Peninsula Resilience Coalition.
And Laura Norton Cruz on the phone. Do you hear me, Laura?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Perfect. You guys all read Laura? Can you hear her? Excellent. Yeah. And Laura, you're the Alaska Resilience Initiative Director. So I'm going to start with you because everybody's going to get this question. What does your title mean? Who are you in your organization?
Sure. The Alaska Resilience Initiative is housed at the Alaska Children's Trust, and we are a statewide cross-sector initiative. What that means is that we bring together people in the business sector, faith, nonprofit, social services, behavioral health, government departments, schools, tribes, anyone who's thinking about how and working on how to reduce trauma and build resilience. And so we come together cross-sector and statewide to work on strengthening a network and collaborating together, as well as on specific strategies for what we call our common agenda, the thing we all share in common, which is mobilizing Alaska to end child maltreatment, intergenerational and systemic trauma through healing and strategic advocacy. And that includes supporting regional coalitions like the Southern Kenai Peninsula Resilience Coalition, which we're so happy to be able to work with.
And the Alaska Resilience Initiative, does that function as a network for everyone, as organizational model for everyone, or?
Yeah, it's a network that we're not replacing or redoing the work that other folks are doing. We know that people in various sectors are already working on reducing trauma and building resilience. So we're a network that helps people better communicate and collaborate with each other, share tools and resources with one another, help build local movements, and then come together and say, well, what do we need to do on a statewide level? Since you all are doing this great work in your communities or your departments, what can we do together that's really powerful? For example, are there policy changes that we need to work together to enact? Are there system changes? Do we need certain kinds of communication messages statewide? So we can create those things statewide to support the work that's already happening and that has been happening in Alaska for decades.
So you do work with, in terms of legislation and policy?
Yeah, we have a policy work group, and so we're figuring out our priorities. We want to be really thoughtful and strategic about what we take on. So there are a number of things we're looking at and weighing. We did support and offer some revisions to and some support for a House concurrent resolution in the last legislative session. It was introduced by Representative Garantar, and it was asking that all legislation use a trauma-informed lens. So consider the impacts on child brain development and children and families and the science of trauma and resilience when enacting legislation and budgets.
Okay, and you will be there tomorrow
at
the event that we'll be talking about in just a few minutes, right?
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I've been working with the governor's office and the first lady this last year to put on a series of faith leader forums. So we helped do the organization and the presentation for forums in Anchorage, Juneau, and the Mat-Su Valley. And so this fall, we have them coming up in Homer, Kenai, and Fairbanks.
Okay, great. Thank you. And I'd like to move on to Amy Woodruff. So Amy, it's give a brief introduction of yourself and a short explanation of what it is that you do.
Yeah, so I've been in Homer for 5 years. I work out of Haven House, running their prevention programs, and part of that role is coordinating the Resilience Coalition, which, it's sort of the same model that Laura spoke about. It's a group of community members, social service agencies, parents, faith leaders, really anybody who's interested in working as a community to reduce trauma and build resilience.
And the same question that I asked Laura is for you. What about the specifics of what you do? Are you involved in policy or even like city resolutions and that sort of thing? What kind of work do you expect to do?
Sure. Before we can really jump into the policy advocacy, we've realized a lot of the work that we have to do is just raising awareness of this and educating the community about ACEs and about resilience. Because, I mean, I think some people have heard of adverse childhood experiences, and it can be kind of a downer to think about the long-term effects of childhood trauma. So that's why our focus is on resilience and on the things that we can do as a community to make up for childhood trauma. And so before we move into advocacy at the city level or at the statewide level, we have been reaching out to, for example, to the school board to talk about what the school can be doing differently. We presented when they came to Homer last month. We are doing this event, which is for community members, of all people of faith. And then we're working on a series of brochures that are going to go out to the community with door-to-door advocacy, and then different white papers with recommendations for specific groups, for educators, for healthcare professionals about, you know, what the science of ACEs and resilience is, and then how they can implement it in their work.
Thanks. And we will get to the science as soon as possible. Next is Olivia Erickson. You're a public health nurse, and you're representing the Safe Families for Children program, right?
Yes.
What does that mean?
So I have two different hats that I'm here for. One is a public health nurse. So as a public health nurse, I work with individuals, communities, and systems and organizations to, well, one of the big things is to prevent violence, and that includes childhood trauma. The other hat that I have is Safe Families for Children. I am here representing that community-led program today. So that is a program that is just starting up in Homer, and the goal is to reduce the amount of adverse childhood experiences that children will have in their life. Practically, this looks like a parent who might be experiencing trauma being able to have their children stay in a safe home with a volunteer until they are able to overcome that trauma or meet a major goal that would allow them to take care of their children and decrease the stress and trauma in that child's life. So it's kind of a brief overview.
And Reverend Talbot, do you need a minute? We can take a dance break.
I'm good, thanks.
Okay. So you are the Reverend Lisa Talbot from the Homer United Methodist Church. And my understanding, my reading for preparation, is that partnering with faith organizations, with churches, with faith-based organizations, is one of the most important elements of this. In fact, it's one of the organizing principles, right?
It is for the Thursday evening meeting. It is specifically a forum for people of faith. And we did change that language a little bit. In other communities that this workshop has been done in, it has been specifically for faith leaders, but Homer is a unique town, and we all know that. We have a lot of Christian churches. We have a lot of Christian communities that are led by official faith leaders, like me as a pastor of a United Methodist Church, a specific denomination, but we also have a much broader base of people of faith. We don't have a local synagogue, but we do have a Jewish population in town that meets and gathers in a home. We have different Buddhist communities. We've got Baha'i. We've got people across the spectrum of Christian and non-Christian faiths, and so we wanted this forum to really speak to the whole breadth of spirituality that we see here in Homer, and so we did open up this forum to all people of faith. And part of our desire to do that was based on the idea that compassion is a universal value among different faith systems, that in most world religions and in most faith communities, there is some version of the golden rule, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And based on that, of loving our neighbor, of reaching out to one another, we wanted to be sure to welcome in all people who describe themselves as people of faith so they could see where there's some common language that we can share, a vocabulary that we can learn that can transcend some of our denominational or interfaith differences so that we can all be speaking the same language about prioritizing safety and support for children and families.
Well, thank you all. And we're going to dive a little deeper The first thing I would like to do is for us to be able to hear from the First Lady. She spoke with me on Friday along with Elizabeth Schultz. Can someone here give me an understanding? Do you guys know Ms. Schultz from her office?
I do. Elizabeth Schultz is Reverend Elizabeth Schultz. She's an ordained Presbyterian pastor, and she works for the Office of the Governor, specifically in areas like this, where it's community organizing, outreach, and putting on workshops and forums across the state.
All right. Well, this is a 7-minute-plus interview with the First Lady and Elizabeth Schultz. She'll be setting up a little bit about tomorrow's event, and then we will reconvene. And we'll talk about what's going to happen tomorrow. So this is Elizabeth Schultz, Reverend Elizabeth Schultz, you say, and the First Lady of Alaska, Donna Walker. Madam First Lady Donna Walker on the line, thank you so much. How did you choose this project for yourself?
Well, I have been the honorary chair of the Alaska Children's Trust almost since the first week my husband took office. It was one of the first requests that I accepted. And I'm an attorney by profession, but I'm a mother of four, grandmother of five, and I actually took a year off of lawyering to work as a low-level caseworker for the Office of Children's Services just because the welfare and the safety and well-being of our children is a really critical heart issue for me. And so as honorary chair with Alaska Children's Trust and working in conjunction with Elizabeth Schultz, who is in the governor's office as the nonprofit community liaison, we wanted to go statewide, and the event in Homer will be the fifth or sixth one that we've done, but to educate and inform those who are on the front lines with our children about ACEs, which is the adverse childhood experiences, and how to be on the lookout for that, and you know, ways that they can help prevent and intervene and help secure the well-being of Alaska's children.
So when you talk about adverse childhood experiences and the Alaska Children's Trust response to that, a combination of programs for kids and adults, for people in the healthcare community, in the mental health community. How many people are cooperating, and what kind of services are included in the goals?
So, hi, this is Elizabeth Schultz. I would love to answer that and help the First Lady with this answer, because I just recently had the privilege of attending the Alaska Mental Health Board meeting, and I learned this work goes back 20-plus years in the state through both the Mental Health Board, the Department of Behavioral Health, the Department of Education, the All-Alaska Pediatric Working Group, the Child Trauma Center here in Anchorage. That's just to name a few of the many groups that have been working to highlight the ACEs study, bring that into conversation at all levels of care for children and families, and to talk about the hope that exists when we acknowledge trauma and we work towards building resilience in children and families.
So one of the challenges for Alaska is that we have such a very high rate of child abuse, and we know that children who experience neglect and abuse, you know, have a much higher incidence if they don't build resiliency, if there aren't intervention efforts and prevention efforts, that they have a much higher incidence of not completing their education, of getting involved in, you know, drugs and alcohol, of having mental health issues as well as physical health issues, and becoming incarcerated, and they have a much higher incidence of suicide. So that's why the work is so important. If we can work with these youth at a very early age, steer them away from some of these outcomes, that's what the effort is for.
First Lady Walker, can you talk about your experience in Wisconsin? Can you take me through a little bit of what happened for you last month in Wisconsin?
Well, there is another First Lady Walker. Tonette Walker is the First Lady of Wisconsin, and she has really been a leader and the trauma-informed care initiatives, and has even presented legislation and on a federal level. But it was more of an educational session. There were you know, lots of discussions. The presentations were done by experts in the field and Casey Family Programs that supports so much of this work. And there was quite a variety of depth of first spouses who were familiar with the work and were involved in their own state. So for some, it was the first time that they'd heard of ACEs and trauma-informed care, and for others, their involvement and their state's involvement was quite a bit more advanced. But it was a wonderful opportunity. All the expenses were paid by the Casey Family Programs, and the whole objective is to, again, as we've already stated, all of those that are on the front lines with our children and families to be well-informed ACEs and resiliency, and how we can all, play a part in helping our children grow up to be healthy and self-confident.
I'd like to know a little bit about what's going to happen on Thursday.
Well, the Safe Children, Healthy Family session, primary funder for that has been the Alaska Children's Trust. We have been, here in Anchorage, in Palmer, the Matsu Valley, and in Juneau. And then we're going to Ketchikan and Fairbanks. Oh, no, it'll Ketchikan.
We're going to Homer, Kenai, and Fairbanks this fall.
And we'll be training the attendees on, trauma-informed care and ACEs.
One of the wonderful outcomes of these sessions is that we are coming into a community to learn from that community what is already happening. And Laura Norton Cruz has done a great job in the resilience work and building up these resilience coalitions around the state. And so the goal of tomorrow night's event is really a very targeted networking event where the ACEs study is presented, but there's also a chance for the local nonprofits to introduce themselves. At each one of these forums, we've invited the local OCS worker to come share what the state is able to do and what the state does not do, so that the community has a greater understanding of that piece of child care and also a personal connection with the OCS worker in that community. And then the faith communities have a chance to share what they're doing, so that by the end of the evening, everyone in the room should know what the resilience work looks like in the communities that we go to. And then the outcomes are for the communities to take on their own. It's not something that's any top-down approach to this training. It's very much building up the local communities and helping them know what each other are doing and how to work better together.
Is there new information that's coming to you, like new things that you're learning?
The work and the research on the ACEs is what is presented at every thing that I participate in. And it was the study that was done a few years back. I think what everyone has learned from that is that there really is science behind what we always assumed was true, that, people who experience trauma, are going to be traumatized, and that we shouldn't re-traumatize them by the way that we deal with them. The new thing that people are learning is that now we know that there's science that really backs that up. Certainly looking forward to returning to Homer. I hope people will come out and look forward to meeting folks and convening on this very important topic.
And that is First Lady of Alaska, Donna Walker, also Reverend Elizabeth Schultz. They will be here tomorrow for the event. It takes place tomorrow from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Laura Norton Cruz, are you still on the line?
Yes, I just unmuted myself. So.
Oh, good. And you are one of the chief presenters, you and Trevor Storrs. So we'd like to spend the next 10 minutes or so talking about this event and what people can expect.
Sure. And Trevor has been at the previous faith leader forums or people of faith forums, which I really appreciate, Reverend Lisa Talbot, you reframing the language there. But he's unable to make it tomorrow, so it'll just be me. And I'm doing the presentation, but luckily the Southern Kenai Peninsula Resilience Coalition has so much expertise on this topic and in their community, so they'll be doing the facilitation afterwards. So I'm just going to do a presentation about the what is called the near sciences, which means neurobiology, epigenetics, adverse childhood experiences, and resilience, as well as the so that encompasses the science that helps us understand that childhood adversity, that toxic stress experienced by children, or complex trauma experienced by children can lead to poor adult health and social outcomes, and what we can do about that. And that science helps us understand why it is that those things happen, so that we can better understand children's behavior. And I think the First Lady said it eloquently, that this is intuitive for many people, and this is what we acknowledge is this is ancestral knowledge of many indigenous peoples from throughout the world who have known the importance of taking care of pregnancy and infancy and early childhood in order to have healthy adults. So I'll be presenting some of the science on that, as well as the science, what we know from the science of resilience about what can help and how faith communities in particular can create systems and supports and practices and language to promote children and adolescents and families to be healthy, to have the skills and confidence that they need to heal from trauma and to prevent trauma from occurring, and then how we can support attachment and belonging in faith communities, and how communities can better coordinate with other resources and other nonprofits in their area. So I'll be presenting some examples from different faith communities about how to do that, and then there will be a discussion so that they can think about, well, what does this look like in our community? What does this look like in our congregation or our faith circle?
Well, in a few minutes, I'm going to ask you to go a little more in depth about what the ACEs study is.
Sure.
And the science behind it. But I definitely want to move on to Amy and Olivia and Reverend Talbot to hear from you guys. What are your plans for tomorrow? So we should say tomorrow, Thursday, 6 p.m., the Commons at Homer High School. Mm-hmm. We'll probably say that a few more times. And Amy Woodruff?
Yeah.
You want to go ahead?
Sure. So the event will start off with some remarks from the First Lady, just talking about the importance of this for her and for the state. And then Laura Norton Cruz, who just spoke, will go into the science behind all of this. But as both Donna Walker and Elizabeth Schultz emphasized, this is also about learning what's already happening in our community. So we're not just planning to talk at people. So after this presentation from Laura, there'll be a chance kind of facilitated by myself and by Hannah Gustafson, who works really closely with me on some of the resilience events in the community. We will give everyone an opportunity to share what they're working on and to really build connections. So it is also a dessert potluck. So that the end of the evening, there'll be there'll be a chance to get some treats. But again, we want everyone who cares about safe children and healthy families to feel welcome at this event. So if you don't have time to run to the grocery store, please come tomorrow.
And right. If you want to bring sweets, bring sweets. If you don't want to bring them, come and eat some. Yeah.
And because this is an event about safe children and healthy families, we wanted to make it as accessible as possible. So we are offering free childcare at the event right in the high school with, you know, several people staffing that room. So it is a safe place to bring your kids. It'll be maybe a bit of a late evening, running until 9 if you wanted to stay for the full event.
For dessert.
Exactly. Nice. But we wanted to make sure that people felt like they could come to this event and they could be a part of it.
Well, thanks. And Olivia Erickson, you have some specific goals for this?
You know, unfortunately, I will not be able to attend tomorrow, but we will have some representatives from Safe Family for Children at the event, and then also from one of the faith communities, at least one, that is participating in Safe Families for Children. They'll be there as well.
Great. So maybe you could take a moment after we talk to Reverend Talbot to talk about opportunities for people to meet you mm-hmm. and to hear what you have planned and to get involved with that.
Sounds great.
Reverend Talbot, so same question goes to you. What's going to happen for you tomorrow?
I think this is a great opportunity to draw the circle wider. This work on ACEs and resiliency has been happening in Homer for several years now. And in fact, I think our community is way ahead of the curve of having a community coalition that has been active for almost 10 years now called MAP, Mobilizing for Action Through Planning and Partnership. We have been doing community health needs assessments in conjunction with South Peninsula Hospital, doing community health improvement plans. And over the years, this research on ACEs and resiliency has continued to surface as ways that we can get upstream of some of the problems that we see in our community, that we can raise a healthier next generation by providing support for family and children. And in Homer, the medical community has been on board with this for years. The hospital and many of the providers around town are working on trauma-informed practices already. The nonprofit world in Homer has done many ACEs and resiliency training. And so tomorrow night is a chance to draw that circle wider and invite the faith communities into it. The more people that are educated, the more people who are informed and given tools, the more members of our community will be able to provide support and to help families and to help children that are in need. And my vision for this is, again, drawing the circle wider, and we've got lots of opportunities following this to continue to try to get more and more people in Homer involved, business leaders, farmers, gardeners, fishermen, government employees, educators. You know, there are so many different segments of our population that still have the opportunity to hear about this and see that ACEs actually does have an economic impact as well as a spiritual impact, an educational impact.
What's the economic impact?
So, you know, the research is showing that for children who have experienced trauma, there are a lot of results that happen in adulthood. There are more addictions that can affect people, heart disease, depression, obesity. There's a lot of adult outcomes based on this childhood trauma. So from the loss of work that a person might experience because of that to addiction, the cost of health care, the cost of lost work hours. There's a lot of ways that these traumas from childhood can have a lasting impact, not just on a single person, but on the family and the community that surrounds them as well. And so the more segments of our community that are speaking the same language, who understand what these impacts are, the more people will have to be working towards supporting families, supporting kids to get upstream of the problem, but also to be informed about why things might be happening with adults in our community as well.
And this brings me to the ACEs study, which is what you are all working from, it would seem. Oh, and by the way, Reverend Talbot, in 6 seconds, you made it clear to me what MAP is in a way that I've not been able to understand for years. Because I have always, awesome. I always start with, what's MAP?
I have done my job.
So thank you. I understand MAP in a way I did not understand it 10 minutes
thank
ago.
Thank you.
And Laura Norton Cruz, this brings us to this ACEs study, which everyone is working from. Mm-hmm. The First Lady spoke about that it's 2 years old, the information, the study was conducted. Can you talk about what is the ACEs study
sure.
that we're all working from?
Sure. So the original ACEs study was done in Kaiser Permanente, a health, a managed health organization in California, and it was done in the San Diego location. It was a study that was started by a preventive medicine doctor at Kaiser and a CDC epidemiologist who were both looking at health, chronic health problems and health behaviors and seeing that they had links with depression and childhood abuse. And so they wanted to do an investigation that was larger than any other investigations that had ever been done to see if chronic disease originates in childhood. And so they, with their 17,400 patients that they had in this managed health organization, they asked them about 10 different adverse childhood experiences that seemed to have a research base. And so they asked about 5 things that happened to them when they were children and 5 things that happened in their household. So we're about physical abuse, sexual abuse, verbal abuse, and physical and emotional neglect. And then they asked about household dysfunction, such as if a household member was incarcerated or experienced mental illness or experienced substance abuse, if there was domestic violence, and if there was parental separation or divorce. And then they asked them a number of questions about health behaviors and health outcomes, and they also had access to their health records to look at the effects. And this was done in, it was first completed and published in 1997, and they're still tracking this cohort now, 20 years later. So this is a 20-year-old study. What they found is that these adverse childhood experiences, excuse me, even in this population where they thought the incidences would be low because they were mostly college-educated, middle class, it was about 80% white. They thought these incidences would be low, and what they found is that they were actually very common. Something like 27% of them had grown up with a household with substance abuse, 28% with being physically abused, 21% being sexually abused. And they found that these often occur together, that one ACE, adverse childhood experience, put you at risk for other ACEs. And most significantly, what they found is that the more of these different ACEs that you experienced, what they called an ACE score, so if you had experienced two of these things, you had an ACE score of two. If you had experienced four of these different things, your ACE score is four. They found that as the dose of ACEs went up, the likelihood of experiencing health problems in adulthood went up. Now, that doesn't mean that everybody who had a high ACE score had health problems. It's not predictive on a one-to-one level, like this is your destiny. But it did mean that it increased the risk of it, or that the percentage of the population who had health problems increased. And they saw that for almost every health problem you could think of. Health risk behaviors like smoking and drinking, starting smoking as a child, having 50 or more sexual partners, but all injecting drugs, but also behavioral health outcomes like depression, suicidal ideation. And then they found it for things like liver disease, lung disease, chronic pain, arthritis, cancer, et cetera. And so this was really profound. This is a very profound finding for the medical community. And in the 20 years since then, there's been a lot more research looking at why this happens biologically, what it is about those early childhood experiences, that toxic stress in childhood that leads to changes not only in people's behaviors, right? We know that that toxic stress in childhood can affect regions of the brain that have to do with the pleasure and reward centers, and therefore put people at greater risk of addiction. And so, you know, there's some of this effect on adult health outcomes is because people may be more prone to using substances or doing things that affect their health. But we also have more research showing how this kind of toxic stress can directly affect people's genes. The way that their genes behave, and that's a science called epigenetics, which looks at changes that can happen on top of the genes due to the environment of stress. And I know that all sounds very depressing, and but it's important to know that what's predictable is preventable, as Dr. Robanda says.
It's very serious, but it also, there is some kind of satisfaction that I can derive from knowing that things that we all in our hearts knew had a real effect on people.
Absolutely.
To have the science confirm that feels like that feels like empowerment.
It does, and it makes a very strong financial case for why we need to actually invest in families, especially families of young children. So that we can prevent some of this from happening, and so that if there is trauma happening in a family, that we can get children the support they need early so that it doesn't have to have the effects, these long-term health effects, and so we can support our schools to help those children and families instead of suspending them for the trauma-related behaviors that they're exhibiting, right? It gives us the science we need to transform schools, to transform the juvenile justice system, to transform healthcare system, right, so that we can better meet the needs of people, so that these adversities in childhood don't have to lead to long-term health outcomes in adulthood.
So I am going to open this discussion up to the rest of the panel here in the studio. Thank you, Laura Norton-Cruz, the Alaska Resilience Initiative Director. Please stay on the line and add whatever you like, or if you're on your way to an appointment, then let me know. But I want to also open the phone lines. Any questions you might have, listeners, any comments you might have, we would love to hear them. And there is an array of experienced people to take your questions. The number to call is 235-7721 or 1-800-979-5224 if you'd like to join the discussion. And Amy Woodruff, Olivia Erickson, and Reverend Lisa Talbot, I was hoping to hear from any or all of you regarding this.
Yeah, I'll start. This is Amy Woodruff. I think the biggest impact of this ACEs study and the understanding of resilience is that it's inspired us in the prevention realm to hone in on early childhood, those 0 to 5 years, and what we can do to kind of break the cycle of trauma there. But also, I don't want anyone to think that means that we're writing off everyone, 6 years of age and older. And I think that the big movement in HOMER has been the trauma-informed care initiative, which was kicked off last September as kind of a one-year learning community that many local organizations participated in. And it gave them a chance to learn more about how they could shape their environment and their policies and their practices to be more responsive to the effects of trauma for their clients, for their employees. And we've seen some really amazing changes happen at the hospital, at Flex High School, at Ketchumack Bay Family Planning Clinic. And we really want to open up that movement to different organizations in the community moving forward, because it's a process. It's not, 1 year and you're done. And I think the more organizations in town that are paying attention to how they create their spaces, how they interact with their clients, and how they just design their services, the more comfortable people with trauma will be fully participating in society.
And Olivia Erickson, the Safe Families for Children program seems like an extension, seems like it was developed because of the ACEs study. Is that right?
It wasn't specifically developed because of the ACEs study, but it does directly, the goal is to decrease ACEs. And now that we have this research and this proof that protecting children and preventing trauma when they're young will lead to prevention of chronic health issues, incarceration, mental health issues, addiction, all these major health issues that affect our adult population too. It gives different organizations and our communities kind of this this push to incorporate programs like Safe Families for Children. It gives us the evidence we need to say that this is important. This is important because it's always been important to take care of our kids and one another. But it's also important because it's going to impact our future. It's going to take care of people now. Protecting kids now is going to protect them in the future. And that's a really cool idea.
And what does the Safe Families for Children program do in this area right now? What are opportunities for people to learn more, to participate? What does the Safe Families for Children program do?
So Safe Families for Children is a program that the very practical basis is basically that a parent or guardian who is experiencing some kind of trauma or crisis, let's say maybe they have to go to jail for 30 days, or they have a medical emergency,
or have to have surgery,
or anything. Or maybe they need, if they need to finish a class so that they can get a job and provide for their children, or they don't have a solid living situation, any kind of major crisis, and they, if they don't have some place for their children to go, if they don't have a safe person for their children to stay with, they can reach out to Safe Families for Children. And Safe Families for Children will connect them with a background-checked host family who agrees to take in their children and keep them safe until that crisis has passed or the family is back on their feet. This is before abuse or neglect have occurred. This is before they need OCS services, and there's no cost. And it's a parent-driven interaction, right? The parent decides, this is something that I need to do to protect my children. It's really, really cool. Then once this interaction occurs, other volunteers surround the host family and the parent who has decided to have their children stay with the host family, and they offer support. So tangible needs or a mentoring, it could be anything really to help get the family and the host family through this event.
There are a couple of things I learned in the week leading up to this show, one of which is the people participating in Safe Families for Children program, they aren't government officials. They're not paid.
No.
They're volunteers,
yeah.
Which makes me understand why the faith-based organization element is so important, because there are generations of a model, of an organizational model, mm-hmm. in churches for this very thing that you're trying to get going.
Yeah. It's really exciting because you don't have to be a person of faith to be involved, but this program is sustained in communities through faith organizations. So if you volunteer to be a part of Safe Families, you will be connected to a faith community who will support you during your volunteering process. And it's one of the major protective factors for people who are experiencing trauma, or anybody, to protect them and give them resiliency is relationships. People need somebody to turn to. And if you don't have somebody to turn to, it puts you at risk for adverse childhood experiences and trauma. And so the exciting thing to me about Safe Families is it takes this huge gift that faith communities and any community has of relationship and connection and a safe place, and it offers that to people who don't have it yet. And so hopefully if family is experiencing a crisis and they utilize Safe Families, later on they will have connected with somebody that they trust and they can turn to if another crisis is occurring.
So, hey, there's a caller on the line. Linda, do you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Go ahead, Linda.
I am very excited to hear about all the things that I had heard in process happening in Homer, and I really appreciate the wide circle approach that you're using with the forum. And I am wondering if part of the vision with this, that you can see the forums, Homer and elsewhere that you mentioned, collaborating across the state, and also with this wider circle approach, if we might see this, whether there's a church in a community or not, reaching out across the bay as well in our area.
So who wants to take that? Anybody?
Hi, this is Lisa, and I do see the opportunity for both of those things, for collaboration between communities around Alaska and the opportunity for going across the bay. This forum tomorrow night is specifically hosted by the governor's office, and so unless they put on more events that reach out to those other circles, that's up to them. I think the opportunity for us as a community in Homer is that we have the opportunity to do that now. You know, this is a forum for people of faith. Do we want to do a forum for business leaders? Do we want to do a forum for fishermen? Do we want to do, you know, a forum for our artists and musicians to see how this impacts all the different ways at places in our community? So I think that could be one of the outcomes from this tomorrow night, would be for us as a community to express interest in hosting more of this type of forum of our own. Sort of taking our cue from what the governor's office has done with this particular one. We do have some inter-community conversations that are going on right now, particularly with the MATSU surrounding the opioid epidemic. And their task force has really been instrumental in helping the Homer Opioid Task Force, which is brand new, start to get off the ground. So we do have some history of collaboration with other communities, and that's something that I would love to see increased. I don't think we need to reinvent the wheel. There are beautiful things happening all over the state of Alaska, and the more we can learn about what's happening and what's successful in other communities, the more we can fit that to our context here on the Southern Kenai Peninsula and make sure that we really are serving our whole population.
And Linda, do you feel like that addressed your comment?
Yes, it does, and it makes me think about very, very early on in the work when the businesses of Talkeetna came together for a community discussion and forum, and just how this can grow out of community regardless of, or in addition, let's say, to what government is doing.
Well, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And this is Laura Norton-Cruz.
Go ahead,
I can
Laura.
Just add one thing about the statewide efforts around faith. So Elizabeth has been, you know, trying to bring together people of faith in all these different communities for the forums. And one of the things that has arisen out of this is the beginning of a faith working group to work on what a trauma-informed faith community looks like, and especially what it looks like in Alaska. And so she and others have been doing some research looking around the country for toolkits. There is a trauma-informed faith community toolkit. They reached out and met with Josh Arvidson, who's the director of the Alaska Child Trauma Center, to see what he and his national networks, with the National Child Traumatic Stress Network, have found in terms of faith community approaches. And so they're kind of forming a work group. And if anyone listening is interested in being a part of that work group, you can contact Elizabeth Schultz at the governor's office and let her know.
Thank you. And Olivia Erickson, I would like to come back to you briefly because I'm just about to have someone pull apart the Resilience Coalition for me. But I want to make sure that you feel like you've given a good idea of what people can do to get involved with you.
So there's multiple ways that you can get involved in Safe Families for Children. If you want more information, you can look on Facebook. We have a Safe Families for Children Homer info page. You can also email me at homer.safefamilies@gmail.com. We have not officially launched yet, but we should be launching in the near future. Ways you can get involved: you can be a host family, so you could take in kids. You can be a family friend, which means you offer resources to the host family and the family experiencing the crisis. So that could be transportation, babysitting, helping somebody write a resume, or giving financial advice, stuff like that. Anything that you have to offer, we can find a place for you with Safe Families for Children. And then the other really important role is a family coach. This is the individual who identifies the needs of the family who's experiencing crisis, the children within the home, and the host family, and then connects family friends who will provide for those needs to those families. So,
and I'm assuming volunteers go through background checks and training.
Yes. So there's a 3-hour training online for any volunteer. We like to do those together in little group meetings with snacks. There's also additional training depending on which volunteer position you decide to do. And so that's also online, and we like to do those together as well.
And so that is Olivia Erickson from the Safe Families for Children program, also a public health nurse here in Homer. Amy Woodruff, you are, I'm going to get this right, the Southern Kenai Peninsula Resilience Coalition Coordinator.
Yeah, it's a mouthful. You got it right. Thanks.
And who are all these people?
Yeah, so the Resilience Coalition is just made up of, anybody in the community who wants to learn more about resilience, connect with people who are doing work around this, and collaborate to help make Homer and the whole Southern Kenai Peninsula a safer place and for children and for families. So it can be community members, local nonprofits like the hospital, Sprout, educators.
Like the Green Dot people, were they involved with the coalition?
Green Dot is a big part of it. I'm one of the instructors for Green Dot. And
are you?
Yes.
And, for bystander and intervention training, just in case anybody hasn't heard that before.
And parents, we're excited also to invite local businesses. This last Friday at our meeting, we had someone from Edward Jones come, and that's been really exciting for us because I think everyone can play a part in making our community more resilient.
And that's Amy Woodruff from Southern Kenai Peninsula Resilience Coalition. And Reverend Lisa Talbot, what are the ways that someone you're from Homer United Methodist Church, but I expect you're also dealing with other organizations. How can someone reach out to you and the network that you've established?
The MAP Coalition has certainly been a huge instrumental part of a lot of these community meetings that we've hosted. We tend to do 3 community meetings a year with MAP, and this is our community meeting for the fall, this People of Faith Forum. Earlier this year in May, we had a providers meeting for everybody from medical people to the Homer Community Food Pantry to Haven House, talking about the opioid epidemic, and then hosted a community-wide discussion and panel on opioids. So there's a lot of opportunities that come up that are, it's a whole constellation. It's not just one thing. There's a lot of different entry points for people to become involved. And I would recommend right off the bat that people sign up for the MAP newsletter, for the Resilience Coalition newsletter, because those are two ways that as these meetings and opportunities and trainings get scheduled, we can communicate that with the whole community. So that is a huge part of the transfer of information. And so those two organizations do have great newsletters that come out and provide these. You asked a question earlier, though, Kathleen, that I didn't want to let escape me because I thought it was a really important one. And you asked how our learning about ACEs and resiliency have informed our practices or changed our practice. And this one really is personal to me because it truly did change my practice in just these few years that I've been in Homer. Since the Homer United Methodist Church houses the Homer Community Food Pantry, we are a place where people in need often come.
Oh, and in fact, I was just about to say that there are 12-step meetings to be attended there. I did my Green Dot training there.
Yeah.
So I know that, so you continue, but yes, absolutely.
Well, thank you. Yeah, our hospitality ministry is a huge part of our mission as the church. We know in a small town, it's hard to find spaces to meet. And I would never want a beautiful building to be used for 1 hour on a Sunday morning. So we have a mission to be a place for all people in our community and do try to open the doors to scouts and 12-step programs and trainings and nonprofits and all sorts of opportunities. But one of our biggest passions is the food pantry. And so even just during the week, food pantry operates on Monday, even though they handle calls all week long. You know, one thing I noticed when I first came to Homer was just the number of walk-ins that I would get of people who were in need. And the vast majority of people that were in need needed food. They needed a little bit of help with finances, whether it was utilities or rent. And if it was something that I couldn't help with, I could usually hook them up with the correct community organization. And every great once in a while, there would be somebody who was using the system. And this trauma-informed training really helped me change my way of thinking from what's wrong with you that your best option is to come try to, manipulate me to, man, what has happened in your life that this is your best coping strategy? And how can I help with better coping strategies? And what ways can I walk alongside you and help you see that there are people in our community who really want to help? And so for me, that trauma-informed training really switch the way of thinking from what's wrong with you to what happened to you.
So it's not oppositional
anymore. Because when
we
hear people's stories, we hear that they have these huge life experiences behind them that they're trying to cope with in whatever ways they can. And it makes it much easier to walk with people instead of being in opposition with them.
Well, thank you for making that point. And that is Reverend Lisa Talbot from Homer United Methodist Church. Can someone, let's say Amy, for instance. Amy, can you remind people of what's happening tomorrow and how they can become a part of it?
Sure. So it's an event at the high school in the Commons from 6 to 9. It's a dessert potluck with childcare, and it is about ACEs and resilience and the role that faith communities play in making our community stronger. So you can come to this event. We will be recording the audio at that event to share if you are not able to attend. But we encourage you to come and connect to other people of faith and learn about what's happening in Homer and statewide.
And that's Amy Woodruff, the Southern Kenai Peninsula Resilience Coalition Coordinator. Laura Norton-Cruz, the Alaska Resilience Initiative Director. I was hoping that I could get a final statement from you. Something, what I'm really looking for is what are your next steps after tomorrow's workshop? Like, look into the future a little bit.
Sure. We have a lot of next steps as a statewide initiative. But in terms of tomorrow, you know, I'm coming just to be of assistance, but the community of Homer and in the Southern Kenai Peninsula has such an amazingly active and driven and organized coalition that really, at a statewide level, you know, we're happy to have their guidance for our statewide work and be of any support we can. But I really trust the Southern Kenai Peninsula Resilience Coalition to take this and move with it however they see fit. And that's really our role as a statewide initiative, to support that local work. And then whatever they do, to help elevate it to a statewide level and share it with other regional coalitions. So I'm already learning from all of you organizing this event how to do this event better so that we can inform, you know, use that to inform how we do the Kenai event and how we do the Fairbanks Faith Leader Forum. And then everything that the Southern Kenai Peninsula Resilience Coalition produces and leads on, we then share statewide and help other regions learn from them. So
thank you so very much for being a part of the coffee table this morning. And that's Laura Norton-Cruz, Alaska Resilience Initiative Director, Amy Woodruff, Southern Kenai Peninsula Resilience Coalition Coordinator, and Olivia Erickson, Safe Families for Children Program, and the Reverend Lisa Talbot from the Homer United Methodist Church. Was anyone have a final invitation for tomorrow or any comments or anything you feel like went unsaid? Well, that's all I needed to hear, but feel free. Go ahead, Lisa.
I was going to say, we know that everybody goes through tough times, and the time to start addressing that is now. So this is a great opportunity for people to get together, to learn, to be educated, to meet other people, to build your networks and know that we are a loving, open, supporting community that are working together to make sure that everybody is safe and healthy.
This has been The Coffee Table every Wednesday from 9 to 10 a.m. here on KBBI AM 890, Homer. I'm Kathleen Gustafson. I'm your host for The Coffee Table. Tune in next week. The time is 10 a.m.